better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see? You start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Good morning and welcome to Mouthful, or good evening and welcome to Mouthful. If you're live here at the market, what a great day, a little windy, and that means it's not too hot. That's always a good thing. It is the final farm market celebration day for the Gravenstein Apple, a month-long program by Slow Food Russian River, and Gravenstein apples are represented so well here. There's fresh cider being crushed almost as we speak, and all kinds of wonderful goodies. What we're going to talk about tonight is apple spirits. And I'm really excited. I have three great people with me right now. We have Scott Beatty, author of Artisanal Cocktails, and bartender, master bartender of Spoon Bar. And then we have, all the way from Alameda, we have Lance Winters, the man to whom I should probably be bowing down for making that first bottle of legal absinthe in America in probably 100 years. It's great to meet you, Lance. And I know that Hangar One is based in Alameda. Do you live down there, too?
Yeah, I live in Oakland. Mm-hmm. They don't let me live in Alameda. I'm too noisy, a little too dirty as well. So, but yeah, right down in that area.
And then we also have, returning to Mouthful for at least the second time, Guy Davis of Davis Family Wines. So let's just jump right in. What are y'all doing with apples?
Well, we are making, Lance and I are both making apple brandy from these Gravenstein apples and trying to do something special with an apple that we both feel is special product. So unlike Lance, who's a master distiller, I grow grapes and make wine most of the time. And this is the only distilled spirit that I do. I started back in 96 working with Warren Dutton, one of the cornerstone families here in Sonoma County, just because this apple's been something I was so fond of for so long, and watched those orchards disappearing to Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, which is a perfect fruit in, for this area as well. But I wanted to just do something to pay homage to this delicious fruit.
And so, and here we have it, apple ace. Appalachian.
Yes, a fun play. Very clever. Appalachian.
Eau de vie de pomme, apple brandy, handcrafted by Davis Family Vineyards. And how many years has this been on the market? I mean, do you do it every year?
We do it every year. I believe the bottling you have in your hand is our seventh. So we started working on it 14 years ago. And doing trials where we utilize the entire apple. I took an old grape stemmer crusher and retooled it to chop the entire apple. So oftentimes when apple brandy's made, the juice from the apple is taken, fermented, and then distilled and cask-aged. And it was really important to me to have that character of the apple come through all the processes that it goes through. So to have that beautiful complexity that comes from the Gravenstein apple, the multidimensional fruit, almost floral sometimes when it's in the still. So we chop the entire apple, ferment it in bins as though it's red wine. So the skins and the meat and everything go in with the juice. It's a wild yeast fermentation. So as it starts to ferment, the cap, just as in red wine, is pushed up, and we do punch downs every day. And we have, it looks like 16 bins of apple pie filling as it's all fermenting and it starts to turn color, and we just nurture that through a nice slow fermentation and then take the entire mash, skins, meat, and pump the whole thing into the still and do a distillation. Wow, so that apple character really stays pronounced.
And I see you have brought something with you as well, Lance.
Yeah.
But you have to turn the bottle around so I can see the label.
Okay. I'm going to do it slowly.
Okay, let's see.
You guys can't, on the radio can't see this, but I'm moving it very, very
you
slowly.
You used letterpress. Yeah. I am so impressed.
So is the paper.
I could never do those things consciously. They just pop out of my mouth, independent of will.
Yeah, sadly, the things that pop out of my mouth cause me to blush, typically. So, and Guy and I were talking earlier, and everything I said, he stole from me. So now I don't have anything to say. Thanks, Guy. No, actually, what I want to say to sort of follow out Guy's point. One of the reasons that anybody who's going to be tasting the Appalachian is going to really relate to that and be able to place it with apple, and hopefully the same with our heirloom brandy, is because of the fact that we are using whole fruit. If you go to France and visit Calvados is it's a lovely representation, but they're actually allowed to add a certain percentage of pear to their fermentation.
And you should probably, for people who don't know what Calvados is, could you just give a quick explanation?
I don't know what it is myself. It's an apple brandy that's made in the Normandy region of France, where they grow these amazing little tortured apples on espaliers, very easy to get at, easy to harvest, easy to crush. But because of the fact that they're using a still that's more in line with a cognac still, they don't have the capability to distill a high amount of solids. So the sort of distillation methodology that both Guy and I are engaging in, they can't do. So they can't have that whole fruit. So they have to make up for the lack of the whole apple fruit in some way. They're allowed to use a certain percentage of pear juice in their fermentation. Pears can give you a very appley quality if they're added at the right level. And so that's what they engage in to be able to get that. One of the things that, having not even tasted this batch of Guy's apple brandy, but one of the things I love about it is that it's lightly aged. Apple brandy has the ability to really lose a lot of that fresh fruit character if it's aged for too long. You can find some really beautiful old apple brandies, but they're beautiful in the same way that a cognac is beautiful, where you've got a lot of wood and a lot of wood breakdown products. Younger apple brandies are much more to my taste. You get more of the apple, and if you're going to be making it out of apple, you want it to be redolent of apples. And the reason that distillers that you should be following as distillers do what they do is because they love the smell of certain things. And once a good distiller has fallen in love with a smell, you know it's going to turn up in the bottle. So for us, it's about finding apple aromas and apple flavors that are really true to what we find as an apple identity. And we work that through as sort of shepherds in a process. We grab that fruit. We use the whole fruit, do a cold fermentation.
Now, what varieties do you work with? Gravensteins as well?
This has Gravensteins. It also has Winesap, Arkansas Black, Northern Spy, some Golden Delicious, a little bit of Fuji, several others that off the top of my head I can't remember.
Okay.
Several glasses this morning. Yeah. Well, it's really to be able to get a greater level of complexity. Certain apples do different things. Some are much better for their aromatics. Some are much better for their flavor.
Now, you have to say something about the label. First of all, it's called Heirloom, and it's really beautiful letterpress production.
That's one of Lance's other talents, which he usually doesn't tell people about.
Do you
do
the letterpress?
Amazing letterpresser.
Stop.
No, it's true.
I screw around at letterpress. I've got a couple of presses because they're things of beauty. And
yes,
it's another one of those arts that's dying.
Dying
off,
art. So. Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, and so it's heirloom varietals of apples. And
why is there a rattlesnake? For the obvious reason, duh. I always forget about that.
Yeah.
I still don't get it.
It's the forbidden fruit.
The forbidden fruit.
And the serpent garden.
The snake and the apple and all that. But it's a rattlesnake with its... Well, it's a snake.
It's a snake, yeah.
Snake with its mouth open and it's coiled around an apple.
Actually,
who did the drawing?
He's smiling.
He's smiling, okay.
Yeah. The drawing was done by a local artist friend of mine named Greg McGreevy.
Well, it's really striking and beautiful. Really, really, really beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And Scott, let's bring you in now. You brought all kinds of things with you. I see a nice-looking cocktail glass, a Pink Lady apple, it looks like. Is that a Pink Lady?
This is a Pink Lady, yes.
Yes. And then a jar or a container filled with all kinds of little goodies.
These are little dehydrated apple chips, which we use as a garnish on our apple drink at a spoon bar, which is called the John Chapman, which is named after Johnny Appleseed. I thought it also made a great name for a drink. So the drink that we do at the restaurant has...
We should say the restaurant is Spoon Bar, and it opened...
About 2 months ago now. Yeah, 2 months.
Yeah.
2 months ago. It's inside of the new H2 Hotel, mm-hmm. which is the newest hotel in town, shooting for gold-level LEED certification. It's going to be a completely green hotel.
Cool.
And the restaurant inside of it is called Spoon Bar. The chef is Rudy Mihal, formerly of Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The wine director is Ross Hallett. He used to work at Ravenous, and I'm the bar manager, and I also work there 5 nights a week. And I love using apples in drinks. I think when you're trying to get an apple flavor into a cocktail, you sort of have to use flavor combinations that you find in food. So you think of apples, you think of ginger or cinnamon or vanilla. So it's basically a process where you're trying to take those flavors and rewire them into a cocktail, which should be, you know, somewhat tart and refreshing, appealing to the eye. You know, but you want to grasp all those flavors and just translate them into a drink. So the one that we do at Spoon Bar doesn't use actually the apple brandy, although the version of my book uses Germaine Rabanne apple brandy. But the one we do at Spoon Bar has St. George whiskey, which is an awesome single malt whiskey made in Alameda by Lance and his team. It also has fresh lemon juice in it. It has Nana May Gravenstein apple juice. Mm-hmm. It has a simple syrup, which has ginger essential oil in it to sort of give it that ginger edge.
Uh-huh.
And then it also has a little bit of Lance's pear eau de vie, which is essentially like pear grappa.
And I understand you're going to make this cocktail for us, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You are. Before we do that, can somebody explain the difference between brandy and eau de vie? Would you say eau de vie is more similar to grappa?
I'm going to jump in on that one because there are a lot of different ways that we could spin this, but the simplest way is to say that eau de vie is an unaged brandy. It can be made from juice. It can be made from whole fruit, but it's typically unaged. Even a cognac is considered an eau de vie before it undergoes the aging process.
Okay. I just think of it as that really, really nasty thing that gave me such a horrible hangover in Paris.
We need to change your attitude about that because there are
some... It was really bad.
There are some really amazing
eau de vies. Not the eau de vie, the hangover.
Yeah. Eau de vie is never bad. Hangovers are always bad. So it's important to make that
It was quite nice while I was drinking it.
Yeah, well, that's perfect.
It always is.
And I want to ask, it wasn't the first thing you had to drink that night, was it?
No.
So you had an evening leading up to that.
Don't
blame it on the last thing you drank.
No.
Because it's usually going to be something
I think I would have been fine if I'd only had the champagne and the red wine.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It was when the chef came out and found out, somehow, I think it was with a French friend, and somehow he let the chef know that I also cooked professionally, and he came out and started.
Yes,
he came out and started pouring. He poured several glasses, and I didn't want to be rude, so I drank them.
it's very important.
Anyway, I've always
pours.
Went so eau de vie is young brandy.
It is. It's an unaged brandy, and you could and it can be made from any fruit. So an unaged brandy from apples is an apple eau de vie, an unaged brandy from pears, a pear eau de vie, an unaged brandy from grapes is a grape eau de vie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So once you put it into a barrel, it's going to take on some of the vanilla qualities and smooth out the spirit, which is what you want if it's a sipping drink and you're looking for something like cognac. But the way that the reason why I use this eau de vie in this drink is because it's hot. Because it's intense.
You want that heat. Yeah.
There's just a quarter ounce in the drink, but it really carries through and gives it this extra layer of flavor. Almost like bitters in a cocktail, the way add like one dash of bitters.
Yeah, definitely.
Absinthe, actually a lot of bartenders use that as bitters in cocktails, and you just use a tiny bit because it's so intense and so hot. So there's a little bit of that in the drink also. I should probably make this for
you. Yes, you should make it.
Also on top of the drink, because the drink is sort of a tart, almost like a whiskey sour type cocktail with more layers to it.
Uh-huh.
To give it a little bit of a richness on top, I made a Thai coconut apple ginger foam. So there's just a thin layer of that on top.
Thai, coconut, apple, ginger, foam.
It's good. It's just a little layer.
Okay.
You can do that at home, but you can't do it in the car.
Okay.
Exactly. So you're,
and are you going to be able to make that whole thing for us right here?
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So I will describe, or you can describe while we're doing it. So you came so organized. You have.
So first we add the whiskey, and then we add the lemon juice here, and then we add the apple juice, and the ginger simple syrup.
Here, let's. Why don't we get and then, this right here and
then
pour
just a little,
so we can hear it.
A little dash of pear eau de vie. Just like that.
Nicely done.
So, you know, that could sneak up on somebody because it just looks like apple juice right now. color of apple
I
juice.
I promise it'll look a little better
right before nap time.
There you go.
We sell graham crackers in it at home.
These are...
So you did, you shook it over with ice to chill it down. That went really fast.
Very fast. Then you strain it out. A Spoon Bar and H2 are located right across the street from some wonderful antique shops in town. So we actually went out and bought about 100 antique martini glasses.
Oh, cool.
So this is one of them here. And that's what we use to serve our drinks.
It makes me feel like we're on the set of Mad Men.
Exactly.
Oh, and here's look, it's a foamer.
You just, when you make the foam base, you just add it to a whipped cream canister. And charge it with nitrous oxide with the little whippets, and it comes out like that. No comments, Lance.
I hear something coming from Lance.
His mouth was opening. I saw it coming.
Remember the Volgag I was talking about earlier? It would come in really handy right now.
All right, then a couple of these.
Then
so
you
this
fancy
is,
it up with, and you have thinly sliced Pink Lady apples and dried them in a standard dehydrator.
Scott has single-handedly put Ron Popeil back in business with the dehydrators and the magic bullet.
This is why you should not drink and watch infomercials. I've learned this several times.
Go to bed earlier, Scott.
Exactly. I try.
Okay, so now you are picking flowers. You're taking bachelor button petals, right?
These are little bachelor buttons grown by Bert and Mary Villamere, who own Le Bon Terre, and who sell their goods across the way from us here.
Yes, they are wonderful gardeners. They had better luck with their bachelor buttons this year than I did. Look at that.
It's so pretty.
Look at that.
Someone should hand me a camera
so that I can take a picture of this. Or actually, here, let's just hold it up and let's get a picture right there. And tell us the name of it again.
It's called a John Chapman.
John Chapman.
John Chapman being the real name of Johnny Appleseed, who was a real person, as I learned from reading Michael Pollan's book, Botany of Desire. Have you read that?
Mm-hmm.
John Chapman
looks like he's got very in touch with his feminine side.
Absolutely. I'm a native San Franciscan, so it works. You know, I'm comfortable.
Okay, who's going to try this? Are we all going to try this?
If you don't like it, just lie. Please. I'd be devastated.
It's the most delicious thing I've ever put in my mouth.
All right.
It is quite delicious. Right. And the thing, it's so integrated. You don't have that immediate, alcohol, you know, I'm kind of a wimp with alcohol, believe it or not. It's very, very delicate, and I love the way the lemon juice comes through. Mm-hmm. But I really like how beautifully smooth it is.
I like how pretty it is.
It is. It's very pretty. Mm. Now, you can find this recipe, and it is, we're just sitting here at the farmer's market, and you made it really quickly. So, and it's in the book, Artisanal Cocktails, right?
No, it's a slightly different variation.
Oh, it is a different variation.
The one in the book has an apple brandy base, which is what these gentlemen make, mm-hmm. But also lemon juice, ginger, and those other ingredients.
Okay, it's very similar.
Yeah.
But it's all with all of those ingredients, which what I think you've done is you've taken a lot of very powerful ingredients and integrated them into something of their own. And that's really, you rock. Well,
thank you. That's
you
what we were aiming
rock.
For.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice because a lot of people are scared of drinking whiskey. And this is kind of like a gateway cocktail.
You bet.
If you will.
It's a stepping
you know?
Stone to one's
They're like,
tomorrow.
Wow, perfect. I actually can drink whiskey.
Stepping stone. You know? There you go. And yeah. It's not scary. I could drink two or three of those without even noticing.
What's so nice is it that character of this A+ whiskey comes through but doesn't overwhelm the apple. It's still very apple driven, but
yeah.
You know, the character of the whiskey It's gorgeous.
Thank you very much.
And I think Scott has very neatly summed up here what we're all about is trying to get that balance. Scott's taking an approach by taking a number of different ingredients to paint a complete picture of what's beautiful about the apple. And both Guy and myself are trying to, through using the right apples and the right techniques of fermentation and distillation, to paint a complete picture of what the apple's all about in a spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And what Scott was talking about with being able to figure out the food ingredients that you would pair with apple, we're trying to do that through the choice of apples and through the barrel aging. Scott's talking about cinnamon and vanilla going well with apple. That's what you pick up from the barrel aging process when it's at its best.
The other thing, you know, that I think goes really well with apple, and I'd be very curious to see what you would do with this, is butter.
I actually had an amazing apple butter cocktail at
I'm
Tales
not a
of
bit surprised.
Were you there for that? 2 years ago? Who was that guy? He was from New York. I have no idea how he incorporated the actual apple butter because it had no, you know, fat to it or whatever you call it. But it was a whiskey apple butter drink, and it was one of the most delicious things I've ever had. He must have clarified it, I think.
Yeah. You could serve it in a butter shot glass.
Mm.
You know, if you took a big cube of butter and then carved it up and hollowed it out, and then you could eat the butter afterwards.
I mean, absolutely.
I'm all
or
over
if
that.
You could do it, you could just hold that cocktail over a piece of toast, and as you're drinking, it's melting down onto your toast, and then you just smear the rest of it on it.
Okay, thanks. I'm out of here. I gotta go make that.
Okay, we're gonna take a little musical break here. If you're listening on the radio, we'll be right back with more talk about all things apples.
Well, now we dance.
Listening to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour here on KRCB. We are recording live at the beautiful Healdsburg Farmers Market. We've got a bunch of apple lovers here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for loving apples.
This apple cocktail is truly a revelation. Really is. It's really absolutely wonderful. One of the things I'm curious about is, you know, in there may be no difference at all, but what does it take to work with apples? I mean, you told me you use the whole thing. You have to have a special kind of distiller. Are there other things that we might not think of, people who don't?
It's helpful to have really big hands for harvesting. Okay. Then you can hold more apples.
You know, you could just wear a long skirt, you know.
Don't tempt him.
Who,
he will
who
do
says
it.
That I don't, Michelle? Now, one of the pieces of specialized equipment that we use for it is just a big hammer mill.
You use a hammer mill, and that's one of the methods used to produce olive oil. The
not
hammer
for
mill.
Us. We don't make olive oil, and I prefer not to talk about that right now, because right now is about me.
Apples. Yes.
No. Well, okay. sort of as a sideline about apples, but mostly about me. And the sooner that we both understand that, and we're halfway there. Because I understand it. No, so yes, a hammer mill, that probably like they would use for making olive oil. And it softens them up. I mean, typically when we're working with other materials, pears, raspberries, cherries, they're soft enough to crush going through a must pump. But with apples, they have to be ground first because, as we were talking about during the fabulous musical break, they're more crunchy.
And do they... Do you have to pick at a certain... Is there an optimum point when you harvest apples, like there is with grapes, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. And with those, as opposed to with pears for us, pears we can get a little green, and they'll ripen off the tree, and we typically get tree-ripened apples, and they're so effusive. Guy, any...
Well, for us, the apples... I use Dutton Ranch apples, so it's an orchard designate brandy that I make.
So they're coming from Sebastopol.
They are from some of the, most of them around 100-year-old trees that I'm using. I let these stay on the tree. So the Duns have picked the majority of this orchard always by the time I take my apples because I'm looking for the optimum amount of flavor that I can possibly get in that fruit, as well as sugar, because the sugar will ferment into alcohol, which will give us a better yield on the brandy. But more than anything, I want the maximum amount of fruit in that apple. So I'm monitoring that long after it's of the character that you would put in the store. It's just about to drop. Once they start to drop from the tree is when I would go in and grab these apples.
So dead ripe.
Yes,
absolutely.
As ripe as we can with the most flavor. The other thing for me, as I mentioned, Lance makes a lot of spirits. This is the only one I make. So my only comparison is to grapes. And when I pick Pinot Noir, I rush to the winery and we de-stem immediately and start worshiping them and holding their hand. With the apples, it's happening simultaneously with my Pinot Noir harvest. And so I leave those on the tree until the last moment. We grab them. And then I use also some Jonathan's, and we'll monitor each of these orchards. But I gather them up, and it gives me a little bit more flexibility because I can put these into storage for a really short window while I finish the grape harvest and then go back to them after Thanksgiving.
Oh, so you have a nice barrel window.
And then I will do that just because I can't simultaneously do this during the middle of grape harvest.
Cloned yourself yet.
So we've done some trials, and the ones that rested for a month or two actually were my favorites. So that's how we've decided to do it. And so about the opposite of how we rush to winery with the grapes, we rest these in cold storage.
Lance, where do you get your your apples? Where do you get your apples?
We get them from a number of different places, but one of the bigger ranches that we'll get them from is Walker. And the apples that we get from them are fantastic. There have been a handful of small orchards that have brought us their product to be able to make. There's a brandy that we do called Occidental Road that's an apple brandy. Paul Disco and... his wife, they're out in Sebastopol as well. We've done some apple brandy for them with their apples, and those were 100% Gravensteins. Yeah, and delicious stuff. Really, really beautiful. And to Guy's point from earlier, they're trying to preserve a beautiful apple farm and keep it from being torn out. Very, very old trees. I think they were trees of their grandparents. They don't want them pulled out to be able to put in whatever the rage is in grapes right now. So
you have to find something to do with them.
When life gives you apples, you make apple brandy.
There you go. I'm curious, real quickly, deviating just a little bit about the other...
I'd love to deviate. Let's do it.
I just had a feeling you did. The other thing, the other St. George spirits, the other fruits that you're working with, want to talk about those? Some of the other stuff you're making? And it's like Hanger One is the umbrella name, right? And
then the label, the shadow I live under.
And the label is St. George Spirits, and then Heirloom, and these other things are the names of the products.
Yeah, and it's all a function of our ADD. give a man a drink, he's drunk for the morning or the afternoon, depending on when you like to drink. Give a man a still, and he wastes the rest of his life. And one of the things that we've most recently done is we found a source of sugarcane in the Imperial Valley. And started bringing that up to the distillery, crushing it with an antique Indian sugarcane mill that we bought that was billed as brand new, and making an Agricole rum, which is actually available at Spoon Bar right now under the name Agua Libre. And it's redolent of the aromas of sugarcane. If you've ever been to any place like in Mexico or Thailand or someplace where on the street they'll juice sugarcane for you and you have that glass, it's got that sweet sugary aroma, but it's also got the aroma of fresh cut grass.
Mm-hmm.
That's all in there. You pick up a glass of this rum and you're hit over the head with a stalk of sugarcane. Not to the way that you'd have an eau de vie hangover in the morning, but it's still it's really, really lovely, and you can't hide it in a cocktail unless you try really hard. That's one of the things we're super excited about right now. Also,
they're almost completely out of it.
They had a
very fixed amount of the aged version of it, which was two and a half years.
Two and a half years old, yeah.
And that is basically completely sold out. They're not going to have any for at least a year or more, I think.
Yeah.
And the unaged, the fresh cane version, which is, you know, the clear version of it, is running out of supply pretty quickly, too.
Pretty popular stuff, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
All the kids are drinking it.
Where are you sourcing that sugar cane?
It's down near Brawley. There's a guy who was growing mostly carrots, sugar beets, and sorghum, and he received his name's Carson Kalen, and he wanted to start experimenting with sugarcane and started planting. I think he planted 3 or 4 acres of sugarcane. The first year we bought 25 tons from him, and then after that, when we saw how amazing this stuff was, we just started going in bigger. We need to do a bunch more this year, obviously, since we ran out so quickly of the stuff that we did. But it's really neat stuff.
That's fantastic.
You just got a big award for the clear one, didn't you?
We did. We took a gold medal on the unaged rum at the Ministry of Rum Tasting in San Francisco just a couple of weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We took a silver on the aged, but we'll try harder next time.
Well, I can't be this close to you without, you know, really going a little more into the subject of absinthe.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going somewhere else with that.
Absinthe. I mean, I have long loved absinthe, long before I ever dreamed I would get to taste it. I mean, as a student of 19th century British literature, you have to love absinthe to do that. So tell me about yours.
Well, it all started when I was 12 and I read The Sun Also Rises. Sorry. It's Scotty's cocktail. I'd been making absinthe for about 12 years. At the distillery.
Oh.
Totally legal for me to make it. I just couldn't sell it. So we'd make a batch and then destroy it. Wink.
There are many ways to destroy something.
Yes, there are, and I know the best of them. I'm like Ganesh in that way, the remover of obstacles. For 12 years, playing around with it, experimenting. The very first year that we made it, because I didn't understand the difference between large and small wormwood, Artemisia pontica and Artemisia absinthium, I made a batch that was the first time completely undrinkable.
Because it was bitter?
Because it was overwhelmingly bitter. By the time we finished drinking it, I realized what the problem was and was able to go back and tweak it. 12 years later, we had done absinthe where there was chamomile in the finishing herbs. There were some where my Christmas tree went into the finishing herbs. There were some that were much more traditional, and then there were some that were just really bizarre. But even the bizarre ones were fun. When we caught wind that the law was going to change, I said, I really enjoy making a product that is sort of a renegade product, so I will never, ever, ever in my entire life make a commercially available absinthe. Needless to say, the next day we applied for label approval. Because it's one of those things where I would gladly give away every product that we make just for the sake of being able to share this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching people's faces when they taste what we make. And, you know, if you're making it and you're not getting it to more people, I don't get that feedback that I need to pump my ego up.
That's a big task.
It's a big task, and
I sort of gather that.
It's a lot like, it's my ego's like a bounce house, you know? It's very big, it's a lot of fun, but it's fragile. You don't want to wear pumps in it. Well, you might want to, but anyway.
It may not be a good idea.
Thank you. I appreciate you summing all that up. So being able to share it, being able to get it out in the marketplace was very important.
I consider it a public service.
I do as well. Unfortunately, we're not able to treat it as a nonprofit, so we have to pay all our taxes and everything. But it's one of those things where we were able to put a product out and really, really enjoy the response that came from it. The first day that it was released, we had a line of people about 4 hours long at the distillery.
Oh, what fun.
And news cameras inside our tasting room with people ducking to the side, hiding their faces because they had called in sick to work to be able to come and buy a bottle of absinthe the first day it was released. We had two helicopters circling the parking lot with news cameras. I had Telemundo interviewing me in Spanish. And I just nodded thoughtfully at all the right spots. But, yeah, it's been fantastic to be able to do it, and we wanted to be able to have something that, to us, represented a real high point for distilling. You're dealing with a lot of these herbs that are all prima donna herbs. They all have very loud personalities, very distinct personalities, and it's a balancing act to get them all to work in harmony. And when you're trying to do this on large-scale batches, multiple batches with agriculturally sourced ingredients, it's a difficult balancing act to do and do consistently. So to be able to do that and have it received as well as it was a great thing for us. We really enjoyed it.
Now that, you know, sort of the initial frenzy is over, has it found a consistent market? Is it selling well?
It has. It's a consistent market. It's obviously much smaller than the frenzy was when people realized that they're not going to hallucinate when they drink this stuff, that there were a lot of people that stepped back.
They thought they were going to?
Oh, yeah. There was the whole time it's been outlawed, there was a lot of hype around it, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of hysteria, and people are interested in that unknown quantity. As soon as they know it, they're less interested. But the people who have appreciated it from the beginning for what it truly is, and that's a very complex, very interesting spirit that at different levels will unfold itself and captivate you. It's visually captivating in its color from the beginning. It's visually captivating when it starts to louche as you add water to it. And then the nose unfolds. It goes from being just very stark black licorice into this beautiful, deep, musty place. You start to get the meadow sweet. You start to get the stinging nettles. You start to get the mint, the tarragon, the basil, all underneath all that. Those things all slowly come out, and it's like reading a story. There are very few spirits that can have those layers of complexity to them, and the people that appreciate it for that, they're still around, mm-hmm. and they're still drinking it. And there are a lot of very talented bartenders like Scott. I mean, there are very few that are like Scott. He's an institution. But there are a lot of talented bartenders that recognize how it will bring a lot of depth and dimension to a cocktail as well, without even being the key player in it.
What do you do with absinthe, Scott?
Two drinks in particular. Mm-hmm. One is the classic Sazerac, mm-hmm. which you basically rinse your glass with about a quarter ounce of absinthe.
And I always wonder, do you have a special container that then, because you have to pour it out, do you save that?
The containers for it?
No, the part that you pour out. Because
it's a water jug for after a shift?
Exactly.
So
I mean, I've watched people
swirl it around and drip it in my mouth.
Okay, because, you know, I've watched people make Sazeracs, and it's like, you're pouring out the absinthe. Where is it going?
If you're good at it, you add just enough to coat the whole glass. There might be a drop
or
two.
I'll quit
just
worrying.
Still sinful, but it's just a drop
like
or two.
I don't like wasted absinthe.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. So the classic Sazerac. Mm-hmm. We actually have three different versions of the Sazerac at Spoon Bar.
You want to explain a Sazerac?
A Sazerac traditionally is a little bit of sugar, Peychaud bitters, which is a reddish-colored, anise-driven bitters made in New Orleans, rye whiskey, and a little bit of herb saint or absinthe, mm-hmm. Or even you could use pastis. Mm-hmm. The most complex and interesting option there is definitely going to be the absinthe. And you basically, you rinse your glass, and then in an empty mixing glass, you add the sugar and the bitters and the rye whiskey. Add some ice, stir it for about 30 mm-hmm. seconds, strain it out into the glass, mm-hmm. and then zest a lemon over it. So you get some of those wonderful lemon oils mm-hmm. over the drink. But that's one of the most classic drinks in, mm-hmm. in the United States, yeah. Started in New Orleans. We have a couple other different versions of it, a Spoon Bar, but that's the traditional
version. That's the classic
version.
One. And then what are some that are all yours?
You know, I don't really have any original absinthe drinks there, but there is another one called a Corpse Reviver Number 2. The reason why it's called a Corpse Reviver is because it was something you would traditionally drink in the morning to revive your corpse, as it were, and, you know, take the edge off. The drink is basically equal parts Lillet, Cointreau, gin, and lemon juice. And then just a little hint of absinthe. But it's funny how that little quarter ounce or less that you use in a drink is the flavor that lingers after you've taken that first sip. You know, you kind of get the gin and you get the orange from the liqueur and the Lillet, and you get the lemon juice, and it's refreshing. And then you get this finish that kicks in, which if you use really well-made absinthe, like, you know, with what Lance makes, all those herbs start to kind of announce themselves over, you know, 10 or 15 seconds, and it's just beautiful. It's like I mentioned before, it's like the bitters in a cocktail.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, both of those are available at the restaurant.
That was my next question.
Yes.
What's available? Where do we get heirloom? Can you get it at, like, say, you shop at Traverso's or...
No.
No. Okay. It's hard to get.
Yes.
Who do you have to bribe?
I'm considered a man of few words. it's only available at the distillery right now. There are certain things that we make in very limited quantities, and we only have those at the distillery. Yeah.
You know, you can. I will post a link to Hangar One and everything about, you know, just a link to their website on Mouthful's Facebook page and also on Mouthful's page on krcb.org. So you can get, you don't have to, you know, rush to write that down. What about Appalachian, Guy?
Really at the winery.
That's the winery.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's a cocktail here and there around Sonoma County, especially at this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
But such a small amount.
Yeah.
It's at the tasting room in Healdsburg.
Okay, and I'll post that information as well.
Yeah.
You know that we're neighbors. You realize that?
No, I didn't.
I live right on Front Street.
Oh, you do?
Yep.
Stop in. Let's drink together, please.
Well, I had dinner there the other night when Mateo did his roving restaurant there. I had had dinner there.
We had a little pop-up restaurant. Yeah, that was a fun couple nights.
That was a lot of fun. That's nice.
We're going to take another quick break here, and we're going to be back and have one of the most influential apple farmers around join the conversation.
Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home. Down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home. I just got word from the guy who heard from the guy next door to me. The girl he met just loves to pet and fits you to a T. So don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me till I come marching home. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. With anyone else but her. No, 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 not a single soul but me. No, no, no. Don't you sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Not till you see me. Down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. With anyone else but her. No, 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 not a single soul but me. No, no, no. Don't you go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. Not till you see me. Not until you see me marching home. Home, 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 sweet home. Just wait till I come marching home. No, walking down Lover's Lane till you see me. When you see me marching home, then we'll go arm in arm and sit down under the apple tree. Baby, just you and me. When I come marching home.
It's Mouthful at the Market. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for joining us. We are recording this live at the Healdsburg Farmers Market. It is a great day. We've been talking, oh gosh, who have we talked about? Scott Beattie of Spoon Bar made us this fabulous cocktail. We've also had Guy Davis, who makes a wonderful apple brandy, and Lance Winters of Hangar One, St. George Spirits, the man behind the first release of Absinthe. Mm, that was so good. Anyway, now we're going to talk about a woman who has done really fascinating things with apples. It's Renee Kiff. Renee, welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you, Michelle.
And, you know, I have always loved your experiment garden. Where you, is it 38 varieties of apples?
It's 80 varieties
oh, it's 80.
Of apples, yeah.
From UC, and you worked with UC Davis.
Right.
Why don't you tell us about that installation?
We had a garden because I managed the farmer's market here for many years, and to keep up my education in agriculture, because we have a farm, and also I, as manager, I got asked lots of questions. I went to school as much as I could. And in classes that Paul Vossen, our orchard advisor, gave, he was looking for a warm weather orchard to do experimentation with a number of apples from all over the United States. So that was from the UC Extension. And he chose a warm weather site that happened to be in Healdsburg in our Alexander Valley farm, a cool weather site in Sebastopol, and a third site in Pleasanton, which I never could figure out what they were looking for in Pleasanton, but that was the third site.
Good shopping opportunities.
So they came and planted 82 varieties of apples and espaliered them, and were hoping that we would find out then which apples liked our area.
And what did you find out?
We found out that some died right away. Particularly a big apple that grew, they bore fruit in their third year. And one apple called Mutsu is an Ohio apple. It did not like Alexander Valley. It was huge. One apple could make a pie.
Really?
So wow. We were very sad when that one died. But other apples amazingly did very well. For instance, Honey Crisp, which is a Minnesota apple. Empire, which is named after the Empire State of New York. It loves Healdsburg. So it's fun to have these apples, especially when tourists come by and they're looking for a little bit of home, and all of a sudden they see their homegrown apple. So that's a lot of fun.
And what did you have? Did you have like two trees of each?
Two trees of each.
You got all espaliered.
Yeah.
And you sell them at the market.
That's right.
Talk a little bit about that, because I know you'll come one week and you'll get this fabulous apple. 2 weeks later, you're getting a different apple.
It's gone. The one that you came for is gone, but hopefully we have another one to replace it. Yeah. So we start, our apple season starts about July 4 with an apple called William's Pride. It's a little red apple. Looks like Washington Delicious. It doesn't have a lot of flavor, but it's early and red, and they like the apple folks like that. Then we end with Northern Spy, which is the favorite pie apple.
Yeah, the Spy is a great apple.
Yeah. So the apples start, then in July we reach the top of the heap now. And then we start fading out in early November.
So you'll have some, though, until November.
Until November, yeah.
And then
yeah.
Do you have, talk about the Gravensteins.
Now, the Gravensteins, I keep being asked if we have Gravensteins, and we have red Graves.
Red Graves.
But they have a short season, as the Graves do. Mm-hmm. The problem with Graves is they have a very short stem that attaches to the branch. And that's why they drop so readily. There's not a lot of hook there for that apple to hang on to. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they'll drop before they're ripe. So for commercial purposes, the Gravensteins have a short, limited lifespan, although they are wonderful,
they're
of
so
course.
Flavorful.
Of course, they're wonderful. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people will look at our many varieties of apples and say, do you have Gravensteins? And when I say no, they say, well, thank you very much, and they walk away.
Well, that certainly shows that Gravenstein, the word has gotten out about Gravensteins, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite?
Oh, it depends upon what I want to do, right?
Name several.
Right. For pies, a cross between Granny Smith and Jonna Gold's makes a wonderful pie. Mm-hmm. You can't beat Gravensteins for applesauce. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that matches it. I've made many applesauce different concoctions, and I freeze it. because I don't trust my canning ability. So I freeze them in little deli containers. And inevitably, the only one that holds its taste is the Gravenstein. Yeah, so that's a problem.
Well, that's one of the amazing things about Gravensteins. They're wanted for commercial production. If you add some Gravenstein juice or some to applesauce, it pumps up the flavor of the other apples.
Right, right. For fresh eating, Honeycrisp is delightful. That's the Minnesota apple. There's a number of apples that are called PRI apples. And the beauty of them is that you don't have to spray them. The P stands for Purdue, the R for Rutgers, and the I for Indiana. And these apples have been worked with and brought in some genetic material from the original apples in Kazakhstan. And those early apples were virus-proof, which is why they live.
Uh-huh.
So the apple gene people, the scientists, take sometimes those genes from the ancient apple wood, and then they introduce it to new apples. So the PRI apples, the Purdue, Rutgers, Indiana apples, they do not get apple scab.
Oh, that's a great thing
so
to know.
So they'll stay clean. And often, most of the time, they will hide the PRI initials in their apple names. For instance, we have Pristine, Priscilla, Williams Pride. Those are the ones that come to my mind.
Apricot.
And they all have the PRI in it. Yeah, not apricot.
Well, Renee, where do people... You sell it at the Hillsburg Farmers Market. What's the name of your farm?
Ridgeview Farm.
That's right, Ridgeview Farms. And you're at this market, the Hillsburg Market. You also are at the Santa Rosa Market, right?
On Wednesday.
On Wednesdays,
yes,
that's right.
Yes, only on Wednesday because we're here on Saturday.
Yes, and you have
Hillsburg.
More than apples. You have really good French breakfast radishes, some very nice lettuces, gorgeous flowers I've always gotten.
Yeah.
I love your bouquets.
We also sell in Windsor on Sunday.
Oh, in Windsor as well. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
I think we're nearing
the end. Oh, one other thing you said visitors come. Can people visit your farm and see the espaliered apples?
They can. We're members of Farm Trails.
Okay, so they just pick up a Farm Trails map and look for Ridgeview. Yeah. Sorry about that. Ridgeview in Alexander Valley.
Right.
I'm thinking of a wine I just discovered last weekend, Ridgeway Wine. It's at this event down on the Petaluma River, this incredible estate in Lakeville, and it was an event for the Friends of the Santa Rosa River, and tasted a Ridgeway Pinot Noir, and they were all wines from that area. This Pinot had it had the Pinot thing, so it's still on my mind. Anyway,
well, thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much for being here. I want to thank
you. Stan Ridgeway, the lead singer of Wall of Voodoo.
Yes, there's also Stan Ridgeway.
Mexican radio.
I have that on vinyl.
Wow. You just shut me up.
Wow.
That's a feat.
Okay, and Scott, when are you tending bar at Spoon Bar?
I usually start at about 5 o'clock. We're open 7 nights a week. We open up at 5. We also do lunches now, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay.
And we start at noon. And serve drinks straight through. It's a bit of a limited drink program for lunchtime, but fantastic.
Probably a good thing.
It is, you know. Otherwise, people like Lance would be hanging out, you know, all day long. We have a wonderful fresh tomato juice, Bloody Mary, right now with cutting celery in it and balsamic vinegar and verju, and it's stellar. Great margaritas, mojitos, and Bellinis. That's kind of our lunch program. And then we phase into a more extensive cocktail menu around 5 o'clock.
So, and then what's the address?
The address is 217 Hillsburg Avenue.
217 Hillsburg Avenue. There you go. Thanks so much. And thanks for making this fabulous John Chapman. It is a great cocktail. You can order it in Spoon Bar. Lance Winters, thank you so much. Radio will never be the same.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
I also have to say thanks very much to our program director, Robin Pressman, for also engineering the show. Thanks to the Hillsburg Farmers Market for having us. Thanks to Slow Food Russian River for doing so many great things to promote the Gravenstein apple. It is Sonoma County's signature apple. And thanks to you as well for listening to Mouthful. You can always send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net. And tune in next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Have a great week.
Oh, yeah.